All right, so good evening and welcome. So welcoming is what I'll actually like to explore and talk about tonight. We often say that at the beginning of a retreat or an event, to welcome all these different aspects of yourself, the different display of humanity, the different ranges of the color of your skin, your health, your age, whether you're a parent or not a parent, all these different qualities. We say welcome. And I like to explore this sense of welcoming from an external environment, external conditions, to this internal welcoming, the sense of internal welcoming. So that sense of welcoming, it's always easier to feel welcome when you look around and feel like, okay, you know, most people are kind of like me. And it takes a certain courage to come, even though maybe you feel like you're more in the minority, especially if there's a sense of being reinforced by society's marginalization. So just to honor that sense of extra courage it takes to come. Because, you know, often when we feel like there's a certain connection with everyone else, we feel more at home. And sometimes we have to go in spite of that. You know, say, no, I don't quite fit in. I'm not quite the same as everyone else here. So the sense of external welcoming is often where we start. Right? The sense of environment, you know, the space here. Some of us like the kind of sparse environment. Some of us like the sense of quiet and not having to talk. Others of us, you know, it's a stretch to not relate, to not connect, to not see if this other person is actually looking at me as a human being. Right? The activity of sitting still is very radical in our society, to be quiet and to be still with yourself. So this external environment, some of us find that more welcoming naturally than others. But the hope is that how we relate and hold each other, that there's enough safety, there's enough sense of ease that we can start to move from this external welcoming into this internal welcoming, this internal sense of meeting ourselves. This often starts with just this noticing that there's this stillness. There's a quiet that permeates, that's beyond our noisy mind, our lost in thought, our arguments with ourselves, our self-judgment, our comparison. That underneath all that, there seems to be a certain quiet. And when we start to touch that quiet, then we start to feel this sense of being welcomed. And we start to see, and despite all of the personal differences, all of the uniqueness of ourselves, there's this universal sense of stillness that beckons our heart. This is this much deeper quality of welcoming. And as we start to get a sense of that and start to have a taste of that, then that starts to invite an internal welcoming of our own hearts. We start to welcome back all the parts that we've disowned, that we've cast out, that we've judged, that we don't allow. Right? And those start to come forth. Right? And then hopefully the practice has enough stability, enough capacity to start to meet that. Often when we teach our 6-week beginning classes, around week 4, it's a bit rough there, because you have enough capacity to start to meet your experience, to see it. And that very stillness invites what's been disowned to start to come back, to start to arise, to be met. So we don't only have to develop the capacity to have a steady attention, but to also have a capacity to have a compassionate attention, to meet those very tender aspects of ourselves. And as that grows, as we start to welcome these parts of ourselves with balance, with compassion, then there's even a deeper quality of stillness. We start to sense that this stillness is still present regardless of the external or internal conditions. Sitting in the middle of downtown Seattle, sitting here in the hall, sitting in nature, all these have this underlying quality of stillness, sitting with my anger, my lust, my fear. There's also the capacity of stillness, which is also present. So this is the heart of this practice, is learning to welcome ourselves deeply into the moment, and realizing there's really no other place to be other than this moment. And the more I can relax my friction with the moment, my argument with the moment, the more my suffering falls away. So this is not a linear process, of course, that we feel that sense of welcoming and then we may feel a sense of feeling alienated or not belonging. And if we have this ability to meet that, it becomes more and more stable. We could say this process is this movement toward the three refuges, the three gems of the Buddha, of the Dharma, and the Sangha. In the beginning of the first Tuesday of each year, Tuari and I do this precepts and refuges ceremony. And the sense of welcoming is when we go into the tradition, it's really going for refuge, going to refuge for these three triple gems. When I say refuge, it's this movement from our minds, movement from the noise, from the self-hatred, the external comparison and judgment, into that place of stillness. And that stillness, we start to become more and more oriented as our true refuge. And it has these different aspects. There's a refuge in the Buddha. In, you know, some of us identify with him as just another human being that happened to look very deeply and to solve this fundamental problem of suffering, of this unnecessary angst and stress and suffering that we carry, that he looked so deeply to solve that. And beyond just solving it, he was able to articulate and to create this path that we walk. So the refuge in the Buddha, in the sense of someone who's pointed the way, who's established the path. There's a refuge in the Dharma, in the understanding of how things really are, through our confusion, seeing through our confusion to the actual bedrock of reality, of how this mind and body work, how the contraction arises and passes away. As this year, Tuari and I have been exploring the Four Noble Truths with you, and the Eightfold Path. This is this understanding of how this basic description of dukkha, the origination of dukkha, the sensation of dukkha, and the path leading to the end of dukkha. This is the Dharma. This is this path that we walk upon. There's many lists, there's many details, but the most important thing is to start to see this for yourself, to see this in your own heart and mind. The meditation technique just gives you the ability, the potential to see for yourself, to come see for yourself. Not as an abstract knowledge, but actually in this heart, in this mind, and how this heart and mind interact in the world with all the suffering, with all the difficulty. And then finally, the Sangha, the sense of community, of like-minded people. So we often come with so much differences, if we really talk to each other, we see how much more different we really are. But yet those differences, underneath that, we do touch into that love of truth, that love of compassion. Something that perhaps we can't quite articulate because it goes beyond words, beyond concept. It's like this common thread that unites all of us in this room, unites all of us throughout the world. And the more oriented we are to that, the more there's a sense of commonality that we're walking together, that we're supporting each other in this practice. You know, my struggles are shared, your struggles are shared, our growth, our openings, our releases are shared, and it works in a very beautiful way to kind of warm ourselves, that sense of confidence in the practice. The sense of welcoming, You know, starting from a sense of, do I belong here? You know, what is this strange activity, this strange room, these silent, quiet people, right? To that sense of orienting toward that deep stillness and seeing that, how close I can be connected to someone without ever saying a word to them. Luckily, in this community, we can speak, we can share, our, you know, our difficulty, our very trying circumstances, our joys. So we have both that inner stillness that connects us and the warmth of heart as we go through life's unfolding. So ultimately, we're welcoming ourselves to this stillness. When we bow in greeting, we bow at the end, we're bowing to that stillness. And that's really our birthright. So that's the main thing I wanted to share around welcoming. I just want to take this opportunity to say a couple other things, a little unrelated slightly. I'd like to welcome Jonathan back. I'd also like to welcome Carrie, our Dharma teacher, Carrie Peterson, who will be teaching next week and taught last week. And then also I want to just share, remind everyone of the EAR Council, the Ethics and Reconciliation Council. So this is a council of volunteers, or people outside the teaching team, outside of the board, who are a way to an avenue for feedback, you know, both for the board, for the teachers, you know, anything like, you know, could you ring the bell a little louder, or, you know, change the cushions, to something that's more, you know, more tender, something that's more, they feel triggered by some activity. So it's an avenue for us to bring that into consciousness. So there's a chance you can meet with an EAR Council member in confidence or just have a dialogue and kind of have a way of working with that. So Ken is our EAR Council member who's here tonight. If you could stand up for a second, Ken. So Ken spent many hours working with in the EAR Council. And then over back by the three bulletin boards, there's a little box that's a kind of like, it's like a suggestion block. So you can write some comments and put it in there, and they get responded to if you leave your name. You're also welcome to make that anonymous. All right. It's your turn, so you need the mic.
So I'm going to talk about the forgiveness side of welcome. It seems like, you know, you can think about it that, oh, there's welcoming, which is all nice and warm and fuzzy, but the forgiveness side is the hard side, and it's like different, but it's not. It's all based in the same stillness and the same inward touching that happens in the welcoming energy. It's sort of like thinking of a quarter, and there's a heads and a tail, and welcoming is on one side and forgiveness is on the other. It's the same experience. And sometimes we tend to treat it differently, but the stiller you get and the closer you get to the capacity to be in a welcome space, to welcome all the parts of us, to welcome all people, that's where you're going to find forgiveness. That's how you're going to find that capacity for forgiveness. I have been thinking about harm a lot over the last, it's probably been this whole year, it probably has to do with the Four Noble Truths, because it's always touching into suffering, and we've been spending a god-awful amount of time on suffering. So there's all this feeling and awareness around the nature of harm. And I thought about it when I was thinking about doing this talk. I I have spent the bulk of my life trying not to cause any harm to people, trying to see that harm and no more intentional harm. In fact, harmlessness, this connection with harm, is one of the fundamental tenets of Buddhism in this practice. It's this constant looking at harm and intentional harm and causing harm and what happens with harm. And I'm going to share a little story with you because about 3 weeks ago, I think I stepped into a completely different world that I had never stepped into before. I'll see if I can kind of convey how unusual this was around harm. I was at this retreat, this teen retreat, and I was walking with a white woman and a person of color, brown-skinned person of color. We're walking along. And I noticed that this white woman's skin color was like an olive tan that I'd never seen before. So we're walking towards the hall to go inside, and I said, "Oh my God, your skin color is so beautiful." And then there was this awkwardness. She got all awkward. She looks over at the woman of color. The woman of color looks, and then there's all this. But thank God we went right on into the meditation hall. That was the end of it. And I felt like something just happened there, but I didn't quite know what it was. So we go into the meditation hall. This happened like towards the beginning of the retreat. And then I get this little note from the woman of color. She and I are good friends. She said, "Tuari, we haven't checked in with each other during the retreat." So when this was towards the end of the retreat was pretty much over. She said, "Let's go for a walk before we part company." She lives on the East Coast. I live here. I'm like, "Sure, great." So we're going on our walk. We're going to be friends, you and me, walking. No. I'm getting the scolding for saying that this woman's skin color was so nice. And when she first mentioned it, I said, "We're walking because you want to tell me I shouldn't have gave this woman a compliment?" I was a little taken back. Like, that's why you wanted to talk to me? And she's trying to help me understand that she felt harmed by what I said. Now, I didn't mean any harm, so I'm pushing back. Like, you got to work on that. That's a little bit too sensitive. I just gave a compliment. It doesn't have anything to do with you. Why would you get upset? And she's trying to help me understand why she was upset, but I can't hear it because I think the whole idea of her even bringing this up is just over the top crazy. So I'm pushing back like I didn't mean anything by it. So I don't know why you're so upset. I didn't mean anything. This unintended harm. At some point, my practice in the Four Noble Truths begin to poke at me. And I begin to hear this, there is suffering. Like I could feel it in the body. I was feeling upset, I'm all tense, and there's all this suffering. There's all I kept hearing was, there's suffering, there's suffering. And at some point, I decided to stop worrying about whether I did something wrong or not, and just feel this tension, this discomfort. There's some harm here. Something has happened, and I don't really understand what it is. I didn't mean anything wrong, but something has happened because I can feel it. And when I felt that tension, I thought, oh my God, what if I'm feeling her pain? What if when we don't intend harm, but we feel something's wrong, what if our humanness is actually the way in which we could feel someone else's pain? We could feel someone else's sorrow, and here I was feeling it, but because I didn't like it, I was pushing up against it, trying to get rid of it, trying to get rid of it, because it's not mine. I didn't do anything wrong. I shouldn't be feeling bad. So I let go of trying to push away this tension, let go of trying to push it away, and actually started listening to her, just listen to whatever she was saying. Now, I don't have brown skin. I'm black, but I don't have brown skin. And I don't know what it's like to be in brown skin. And for the first time in my life, I could hear her explain to me what it was like for her when we were walking, and I said this flippant thing without even thinking about it. And if I hadn't let go of my own pushing, I wouldn't have been able to step into the space. I wouldn't have been able to hear what it was like for her, because I would be too busy worrying about what it was like for me. So in the course of this letting go and just being with whatever and just listening, she really opened my eyes to harm that I had never even seen before. I have family members that are brown skin, and we kind of talk about things, and I'm black, so I have all this discrimination that comes my way, but never from the perspective of listening to someone else's perspective of being harmed. So then I went to the white woman. I said, you know, I think that may have been a little uncomfortable when I said that. She goes, oh my God, Tori, it was so uncomfortable. Did you not see this woman standing next to me? And I thought, okay. I'm just saying, I just need to apologize if I caused harm to you. Because I talked to this other woman and the impact of what I did was harmful to her. So I need to apologize. And she was so happy. She was like very grateful that she actually gets a chance to say how this made her feel. So here it is, I did this thing. I didn't intend any harm to anybody. I just was flippant in a way. But it has an impact of harm. But at the end, now the retreat's leaving, and something beautiful happened. There was this moment when all three of us were sort of standing there, and there was this kind of appreciation for me having said something, having listened, and then having asked for forgiveness for someone else. And I realized that it's only in unintended harm that we can do that. Because have some intention to do some behavior, not really caring whether it harms anyone or not. We just intend to do it. Somebody might get harmed, but okay, you know. Or sometimes we intend to harm people because we're mad. We tend to, you know, get a little dig in there. When it comes to forgiveness, or it comes to just the place of forgiveness, we got to work through all the stuff of what we did, right? We got to work through all the, I shouldn't have done that, all the regret, wishing we hadn't. Oh, we all know we've been purging that stuff for years, still coming up. All that stuff that we wish we hadn't done, all that mess we wish we could have fixed, and people we can't talk to anymore because it's broken somehow. But in unintended harm, when you mean no harm, but you see that harm exists, that has got to be the most gracious place in the world. I think that is where mercy lies. Both the mercy that you extend to someone else by giving them an opportunity to speak the harm that they feel, and the grace that comes from not owing anybody anything, just the capacity to ask for forgiveness. I don't think I have ever felt quite so free when it comes to harm. There's usually some stickiness around it. But in this unintended harm, it's a completely different world. So I got to thinking, Tim always says something about in his martial arts practice, there's like a secret sauce. Is it secret sauce?
Inner form?
It's the inner door.
Secret form.
It's the secret form. I think unintended harm is our secret weapon. I think it is it's the secret sauce. It's the part of practice that we really are trying to get to. So we come into the practice and you work in the Four Noble Truths and we deal with our intended harm. We do a lot of work around that. It's pretty easy to see that stuff, right? Because you're sitting in meditation and it's knocking in your mind over and over and over about what you did wrong, constantly, constantly, constantly. So seeing intended harm is not a problem. But being able to be with another person's pain or the impact of behavior when you don't intend any harm, that is a completely different level of practice. And it takes a degree of stillness to be able to step into that space. But I think that was the whole point of Buddha's pointing towards. I think it's more about this unintended harm that we try to avoid all the time rather than the intended harm. So I tried to look up this whole idea of harmfulness. Like, what is that? This is a sutta. I'm not going to read it to you. It's called the Discourse on Effacement. It is 14 pages long, single-spaced. And effacement is, what is it says? It is the harmlessness is effacement. 14 single page lines on effacement, this whole idea of harmlessness, how it is that we get to this place of harmlessness and what it means. He even goes so far, the Buddha does, when he's talking to these monks about what harmlessness is. He says that a person could think, oh, I'm detached from sense objects. I've let go of all that sense objects and I'm detached and I'm basically just deep in meditation. And you might think that that is effacement, but it is not. He said that attainment is not called effacement. He said there might be some people that have still their thoughts. They're in concentration. They don't have any of that negative thinking. They don't have the discursive thinking. They have an inner tranquility. And you might think that that is effacement. That is harmlessness. It is not. You might have this complete equanimous state where you're clearly aware of everything that's going on and you're abiding in this sense of happiness. And you could think, clearly this has got to be effacement. I've reached this place of harmlessness. But it is not. There's several more. You might even abandon pleasure and pain. So you're not even caught up in the pleasure or pain. I'm okay with either one. Pleasure or pain, it's okay. And you might think that that is harmlessness, but it is not. You might get, these are like high meditation states. Your perceptions, you lose your perceptions, you have this idea of infinite space, infinite consciousness. There's even a nothingness. Mike, you don't have any perception or consciousness or nothing. You're just out there. And clearly, you can't be causing any harm. That's got to be harmlessness because it's like void of anything. That is not effacement. He said that it all boils down to this idea of harmlessness. And it's the right actions that we're going to talk about starting next month. It says, others will be harmful, But we shall not be harmful here. And that is effacement. It's the... I looked up the word effacement, which means thinning or the act of eliminating something, and we are eliminating harm. That's what it is. That's what our practice is. The whole point of this whole sutta is around how do we eliminate harm? And it has like, how many of them is it? There are 44 ways to eliminate harm. 44 different practices on eliminating harm. And then there are 44 ways to avoid causing harm. Do you see what it is? There's a lot about harm. And I'm beginning to see that if we stop at just our intended harm, if we stop at just the place where we intend to cause some harm, we are missing out on a huge part of practice, because unintended harm, the impact that could happen to another, we don't intend that harm. When we get defensive and we get pushed back against it, like I didn't mean it, so don't bring that to me, we are missing a whole window of practice that could change everything. It's a game changer. When I felt this woman's pain, it was a game changer. I realized that there's a way in which we can step into this idea of forgiveness in a stiller place, because we practice seeking forgiveness when we don't intend any harm. In some respects, that's what we're doing on this forgiveness ceremony. Whatever harm that Tim and I could have caused, or the ceremony we're going to read, that Tim's going to, we're going to go through with Tim, we don't intend any harm to anybody in this place. We don't ever intend any harm. I could never think of harming someone here. That idea just doesn't even make sense to me. I wouldn't dream of it. But it doesn't mean that I don't cause harm. So where else would I ever be able to step into the grace of you knowing that I would never intend any harm, unless two things happen? Two things have to happen. One, whoever got the impact of the harm has to say something. Like she did. You have to say, oh, something happened there. I didn't like that. There's some harm there. And then I have to let go of that. Oh, I didn't mean it. And listen, you hear it. And then there's an opportunity for that stillness, that inner stillness to happen, a welcoming sense of there's pain here. And then you can step into forgiveness. And there's no issue with it. There's no difficulty asking forgiveness, and there's no difficulty extending forgiveness. The only place I think we could do this is in unintended harm. I don't think we can do it with the intended harm, because we got too much selfing, too much stuff going on. But in unintended harm, I think we could really let some things go, really come into strong sense of community around this idea of forgiveness. So let's stop there. Thank you for your kind attention. We'll sit here for a second, and or however long Tim wants to take, and then we'll go into the rest of the ceremony.
All right, so as we move into the ceremony part of this evening, we'll be reading these forgiveness phrases. Both Twer and I will be reading them, and you're invited to read them yourselves. And I ring the bell after each section. And as Tweri mentioned, forgiveness is a process. You know, so depending on where you are with it, it may be the right time to say these phrases. It may not be the right time. Maybe you have to acknowledge the hurt, acknowledge the ownership of what has been done. But it's setting the intention. It's setting the intention to not hold on to this, to start to let it soften. All right, so if you'd like to can go with us.
Want us to do ours first? I'll do it all together?
I think we can. Let's do it all together.
Okay.
All right, so we'll do each one, and I'll ring the bell after each one. Pause for a moment in silence. And we'll bow after each section. So forgiveness for oneself. There are many ways that I have hurt and harmed myself. I have betrayed myself knowingly and unknowingly in thoughts, words, and deeds. For the many ways my fear, pain, anger, and confusion have caused me harm, I now extend a full and heartfelt forgiveness. I forgive myself. Forgiveness from others. Just as I have caused harm to myself, there are many ways that I have hurt and harmed others. I may have knowingly and unknowingly caused harm them by my thoughts, words, and deeds. If out of my fear, pain, anger, and confusion, I have caused you any harm, to the extent that you're ready, I ask for your forgiveness. Please forgive me. Forgiveness for those who have hurt or harmed you. There are also many ways that I have been hurt and harmed by others. I may have been harmed knowingly and unknowingly by another's thoughts, words, and deeds. I remember the ways others, out of their pain, anger, and confusion, have harmed me. I believe I have carried this pain in my heart long enough. To the extent that I am ready, I offer my heartfelt forgiveness to all those who have caused me harm. I forgive you.
Okay, thank you so much. We have one more part of the ceremony. It's the bowing practice that a teacher, Tanesara and Kittisaro, taught. I tell this story, I think I told it before, but I'm gonna tell it again, because stories are like, for me, they're like tradition. So you have this story that gets connected to some process, and it's the story that you remember that helps you stay connected to whatever that is. And so I learned this bowing practice when I was in this community Dharma Leader program. It's this program, out of 2-year program out of Spirit Rock. And in this room, this was the first time they put all these people of different diversities, genders, male, female, abled. It's just completely different. At all of the levels of diversity, age, some people from other countries, American. It was all this diversity that was in this room. It was about 102 of us. And that opening ceremony for that, the beginning of that 2-year program, it would bring you to tears. It was so beautiful. We were all so happy to be together, and everybody was kind of wondering, how did I get picked for this program? That was kind of short-lived. By Wednesday, by midweek, we were pretty much all ready to leave. Didn't want anything, because we had bumped all into each other. All these different cultures, we had offended people, was crazy. It got so bad that the night before this thing happened that I'm about to tell you, we were supposed to go into silence. We had had this horrific argument, and we were supposed to go into silence. And people were blatantly talking and arguing with each other, and the teachers were going off to bed. Nobody was even listening. It was like we were done. We were through. We had lost our practice. We were mad. So the next morning, we came in for the morning session, and we're still lingering over the anger we had the night before. We're kind of all ready to split, pack our stuff. We are not coming back anymore. And there were four teachers on this teacher team, but nobody came in except for Tanesara. She walks into the hall with us, and she gets this chair, and she puts it in the middle of the stage area, and she said, told us the story about Kuan Yin, and how Avalokiteshvara wanted to deal with the suffering of the world. He was like a bodhisattva heading to Buddhahood. He's almost there, and he starts hearing all this difficulty. He can't actually step over the hurdle to go into being a Buddha. He decides he wants to go back and help everybody that's suffering. And he's not going to become a Buddha until he has dealt with all the suffering in the world. That didn't work, because as soon as he went back and tried to help all the suffering, it was just this never-ending flow of suffering. It's just pain after pain after pain. Pain in crevices, pains all over the place. And all this trying to hold and eliminate the suffering of the world just wasn't working. Until, like the story goes, he just exploded. You know, this is one of these stories. He exploded into all these pieces. He couldn't do it. Feels a little bit like Humpty Dumpty, because they put him all back together again as Kuan Yin. Gave him a female body for the nurturing aspect. So even the little suffering in the quiet little corners, she could hear. Kuan Yin, many pictures have her like 1,000 arms, so there's like all these arms around her, like 9,000 heads and eyes and ears, all these different ears, and so she can see and hear all the pain in the world. She has all these different swords and different tools, because suffering requires different tools. Some suffering is not the same as all suffering. In fact, she looks so strange in some of these pictures that my mother saw her. I had a picture of her in my house, and my mother came into my apartment and saw it and went back out. She's like, I'm not going in there until you do something with that thing. I had to take it down. But my favorite photograph of Kuan Yin is the one that's over there when she's sitting on this stool in this position called royal ease. And she has one foot up like she's about ready to get up off her seat and go do whatever needs to be done. But at the same time, she's holding this sense of compassion, this sense of stillness. That's what Tanesara did into that room. She told that story, she held this compassion, and she gave us this bowing practice. And she said, all we're going to do is bow. You're not bowing to anybody. You're just bowing. There's something humbling about bowing. So some people stood and just bowed at the waist. Some people sat in their chair and just bowed in their chair. And some people did a full bow, which is what I always love to do in relation to this practice. Even though my knees are completely shot, I still have to do it. And there's something about the bowing and the bowing and the bowing and the bowing that begins to shift energy inside of us. So the way we're going to do this is divide the room in half. This half of the room, probably we should divide it, I think, right about here. So you gentlemen, you'd be over here, you'd be over here. All you guys would be on this side with Tim. And then I'm going to be on this side. And so the way this song is, you'll be able to tell, but on this card, this it says bowing practice at the bottom, that Nam-myo Kwan Shir Yin Pusa, that's what they're actually saying. So it's a little chant, it's gonna go over and over and over. I'll start the bow. We'll all be standing or sitting or however you want to do your bow. And then this side will go down with me and Tim's side will stay standing. Then Tim's side will go down and we'll come up and then we'll go down and they'll go up. And it's just this back and forth, up and down, up and down, up and down, up and down, up and down. We'll be doing it more than a couple of times. So whatever's comfortable, just we'll do it for a little while. And then after a while, Tim's side will stand up and our side will stand up and we'll stay standing. And when we stay standing, even if they go down, we'll stay standing, we'll come back up, and then we'll all listen to the chant one more time and then that'll be the end of it. Okay? All right, good. So I'm gonna start the music so I can take the mic off and then go on over.
Ooh, yeah.
So thank you all for participating in our ceremony. Just so you know, that group that Tanessa came and gave that story, we stayed together for 2 years. We all, I think there are two people that couldn't stay with the team, but it was because of their work situation. But everybody else came back the very next year. In their very next retreat, we stayed together for 2 years. Probably some of the best friends I have to this day. All because somebody came in and shared that story and created community with us. So I think I want to share the merit of what we've done today, and then we'll do announcements rather than just ending so abruptly. What do you think, Tim? Okay. So, I do not believe that when we come together in practice, in this intent to be still, that it goes unnoticed, that it just floats out there and nothing comes of it. I think that there's a way in which our being still, our practicing stillness against the backdrop of a world that's crazy and moving and shifting all over the place, that there's something that happens in the space when we get quiet and still together. And so if we gather up all the positive and beneficial energies that come from our practice this evening and our intent around practice, our willingness and our desires that are all connected in this practice, if we gather all that energy up and send it out in a direction that actually I'd like to support Sims. Because there's a moment here where we really need a home. We need to find another place. And there is the possibility of new properties coming on the market, and there's all this energy and excitement around what's possible. So if we could take all of the goodwill and beneficial energy that arises out of our practice tonight and send it out in the direction to support Sims finding a new place, I think it would go a long ways to help us. That it would be of good courage to us so that we, even in this difficult time, we stay strong and protected and inspired to keep going, that we take our steps together. That we stay on the path, that we stay with our mission and we stay glued together with the vision, and that it keeps our spirits high, that we never get too afraid to ask for forgiveness, that we don't get too afraid to tell someone that we've been harmed, and that we create a space that welcomes anyone and everyone, wherever that space may be. And with that, may all of our efforts become a cause for the end of suffering and a condition for the liberation of all beings everywhere. May all beings be happy, may they be safe and protected, and may they be free from danger. The special time. I can't help it. I love it.
Amen.